The Later Elmshaven Years, 1905-1915, Volume 6, Chapter 29. Interludes in the Drive on Book Production. The 38th session of the General Conference was scheduled to be held in Washington from May 15 to June 8, 1913. As with the 1909 session held 4 years before, meetings would be in a large tent pitched on the grounds of Washington Missionary College in Tacoma Park, Maryland. The expectation was that Ellen G. White, now 85 years of age, would not attempt to attend. In early May she made her final decision, writing to Edson on the 7th, "I shall not attend. I desire to save my strength for the work here that is essential to be done." Letter 9, 1913. W.C. White wrote that she was quite content with the decision, WCW to AGD, May 1, 1913. She did, however, prepare two messages to be read to the session, and sent them with her son. At the first meeting of the session, W.C. White conveyed to the delegates her oral message of greeting. Opportunity came for this as Elder Daniels, after a brief opening address, opened the way for those attending to express words of gratitude, praise, and thanksgiving. "I bring you greetings from Mother, and from her family, and from her helpers. Her last words to me with reference to the conference were, 'Tell our brethren to be of good cheer. Tell them to have faith in God and to expect great things, to undertake great things, and in His strength to go forward. Tell them not to fear or to look back. My prayers will be with them. Tell our brethren I feel perfectly clear that it is God's will that I shall remain at home and reserve what strength I have to help in the work of bringing my writings into book form, so that they can be published for the people," the General Conference Bulletin, 1913, 5, 6. In his statement to the conference, W.C. White reported on Ellen White's health and welfare. "Mother is 85 years old. She feels the infirmities of age, but she is not suffering with sickness. She is comfortably well. Almost every pleasant day she rides out for an hour or two. Usually she devotes an hour or two to reading and writing, from day to day. Very frequently, as I visit her in the morning, I find the review in her hands, and she says, 'What a wonderful paper! What an interesting report of our work!' And in connection with various reports in the review, she often comments on the progress of the work in many lands. Mother's courage is good. She has no fear of the future. She expects to rest in the grave a little while before the Lord comes, but she has no dread. Her only anxiety is to use day by day what strength God gives her, in a way most acceptable to her Master." Ibid. 6. Ellen White's message to the delegates on Sabbath afternoon. W.C. White was called upon to read Ellen White's message of greeting to the delegates. It contained a challenge to face the work with hopefulness and courage and reminded them that their attitude during the conference would have a telling influence throughout the world field. She declared, "Often in the night season I am bidden to urge our brethren in responsible positions to make earnest effort to follow on to know the Lord more perfectly. When our workers realize as they should the importance of the times in which we live, there will be seen a determined purpose to be on the Lord's side, and they will become in truth laborers together with God." Ibid. 34. She spoke of the disappointment that came to her when at the General Conference of 1909 a work should have been done in the hearts of those in attendance that was not done, and finally, of her rejoicing when some of those in positions of trust after prayer and study of the various messages given, ventured to undertake by faith the work called for, a work they could not fully understand, and as they went forward in the fear of God, they received rich blessing. Ibid. She was referring to evangelizing the cities. Continuing, she admonished, "When the Lord sets His hand to prepare the way before His ministers, it is their duty to follow where He directs. He will never forsake or leave in uncertainty those who follow His leadings with full purpose of heart." Ibid. And she assured the delegates at the 1913 meeting, "I rejoice therefore, my brethren, that I have confidence in you in all things," 2 Corinthians 7 verse 16. "And while I still feel the deepest anxiety over the attitude that some are taking toward important measures connected with the development of the cause of God in the earth, yet I have strong faith in the workers throughout the field, and believe that as they meet together and humble themselves before the Lord and consecrate themselves anew to His service, they will be enabled to do His will." Ibid. She wrote of being deeply impressed by recent scenes of a great revival, with Seventh-day Adventists responding to God's call and moving into line. Ibid. The General Conference Bulletin reported the response to Ellen White's message. The reading of this letter brought forth many hearty amens from the brethren on the rostrum and throughout the congregation. Tears flowed freely as Sister White's expressions of confidence in her brethren and in God's leadership of His people were read, the General Conference Bulletin, 32. Courage in the Lord. The President of the General Conference, Elder A.G. Daniels, presented Ellen White's second message to the delegates 10 days later at the business session on Tuesday morning, May 27. It opened, "Recently in the night session, my mind was impressed by the Holy Spirit with the thought that if the Lord is coming as soon as we believe He is, We ought to be even more active than we have been in years past, Ibid. 164. Then she reviewed God's call for an outreach of the message with a fervor similar to that seen in the days of the Advent movement in 1843 and 1844. She spoke of the needs of the cities and places nigh and afar off, and admonished, never draw back. She urged that we are to move forward in faith and hope, expecting large things from God, and warned, let no discouraging words be spoken, but only such words as will tend to strengthen and sustain your fellow workers. Then she referred to her own participation in the work. I long to be personally engaged in earnest work in the field, and I should most assuredly be engaged in more public labor did I not believe that at my age it is not wise to presume on one's physical strength. I have a work to do in communicating to the church and to the world the light that has been entrusted to me from time to time all through the years during which the third angel's message has been proclaimed. My heart is filled with a most earnest desire to place the truth before all who can be reached. And I am still acting a part in preparing matter for publication. I am more thankful than I can express for the uplifting of the Spirit of the Lord, for the comfort and grace that He continues to give me, and that He grants me strength and opportunity to impart courage and help to His people, Ibid. There was one part of her message to the session that touched a chord in the hearts of many of the delegates present, such as Elder J. N. Loughborough, who with Ellen White had attended the very first session of the General Conference held in Battle Creek in May, 1863, exactly 50 years before, and Elder G. I. Butler, an associate for many years. Here are her comforting and encouraging words. I greatly desire that the old soldiers of the cross, those grown gray in the Master's service, shall continue to bear their testimony right to the point, in order that those younger in the faith may understand that the messages which the Lord gave us in the past are very important at this stage of the earth's history. Our past experience has not lost one jot of its force. Let all be careful not to discourage the pioneers, or cause them to feel that there is little they can do. Their influence may still be mightily exerted in the work of the Lord. The testimony of the aged ministers will ever be a help and a blessing to the church. God will watch over His tried and faithful standard bearers, night and day, until the time comes for them to lay off their armor. Let them be assured that they are under the protecting care of Him who never slumbers or sleeps, that they are watched over by unwearied sentinels. Knowing this, and realizing that they are abiding in Christ, they may rest trustfully in the providences of God, Ibid. There was no word of pessimism in Ellen White's farewell message to the leaders of the church and assembly. She continued, when in the night season I am unable to sleep, I lift my heart in prayer to God, and He strengthens me and gives me the assurance that He is with His ministering servants in the home field and in distant lands. I am encouraged and blessed as I realize that the God of Israel is still guiding His people, and that He will continue to be with them, even to the end, Ibid. She spoke of the need of the special guidance of the Holy Spirit, of carrying forward the work with increasing efficiency, of a work that lies before the church that would put to the stretch every power of the human being. She called for the exercise of strong faith and declared that, with God's help, His servants will finally triumph. Ibid. 165. Both General Conference messages appear in full in Selected Messages 2:398-408. The response. The message and appeal sparked an immediate response, first from the pioneer workers and then others. Elder George I, Butler, summed it up well. I felt greatly blessed and edified with this last communication we have received from God's servant. It should encourage us all. It has the old-fashioned ring in it that is in all her earlier writings. Some thought that as she grew old her writings would be less powerful, but it seems to me that her later writings are the best. God is with that dear woman. I feel thankful for this communication. I believe it ought to encourage us all in the work of God, and especially is it encouraging to some of us who are growing old. May the Lord bless us all and save us in His kingdom, Ibid. The conference in session took action that the President and Secretary of the General Conference be asked, in behalf of this body, to convey to Sister White an expression of appreciation of the counsels given in this message, and of assurance of our Christian love and regard, the General Conference Bulletin, 166. In a letter to his mother on June 7, W. C. White assured her that her messages were read and well received by the delegates at the conference. Eagerly the folk at Elmshaven awaited the arrival of the General Conference bulletins which traced in detail the conference proceedings. Activities at Elmshaven in mid-May, Paul Mason, Ellen White's accountant, went to San Francisco to purchase from Studebaker Brothers a new carriage with rubber tires. It cost $125. P.C. Mason to WCW, May 18, 1913. On Sunday, May 18, she took her first ride in it. Then a few days later, the first copy of the new book counsels to parents and teachers came from the press. On Sunday, June 15, accompanied by Helen Graham, she responded to an invitation to attend a school picnic held in the grove at the W.C. White home.
Children, parents, teachers, and friends met at about 2 o'clock and stayed until 7. She was invited to speak to the group, and instead of talking for an anticipated 20 minutes, she took all of 45. Helen Graham took down her remarks. "I have always had a special interest in the youth," she opened. "I see before me today those whom I know God can use if they will put their dependence in Him."
Manuscript 16, 1913.
Continuing, she said, "Children, if you will be in earnest in serving God, you will be a help to all with whom you associate. There is nothing to be ashamed of in being a Christian. It is an honor to follow the Savior. And it is by obeying the instructions that He has given that you are to be prepared to meet Him when He comes. If you will ask God to help you to overcome what is unchristlike in your dispositions, He will prepare you for entrance into heaven, where no sin can enter gibbet." She urged the study of the Word of God, and she reminded them that the angels were beside them. She told of her girlhood experience and of her feeling of assurance that God would continue to sustain her, for she had a work yet to do. She closed her remarks with a short prayer. Her message seemed very appropriate for an afternoon of Christian recreation, and everyone was glad Sister White could be with them. One evening after worship in the home, Elder A. W. Spaulding, who was spending some time at Elmshaven preparing material for publication on the beginnings of the work of the church in the southern states, offered to assist her up the stairs to her room, but she turned and said, "Oh, no thank you. I am quite able to go alone. Why, I am as spry as when I was a girl."
"As when I was a girl?"
"Yes, indeed. More so. When I was a girl I was ill, and frail, and in pain, but now the Lord has strengthened me all these years, and I am better, far better than when I was a girl." W. Spaulding, Origin and History, Volume 3, page 280. About this time, Sarah McKenterfer, who was back at Elmshaven for a brief visit, reported to W. C. White, who was still in the East, "Mother's health has been more than we dared to hope for during your absence. She sings in the night and she sings in the day, even while in the bathtub taking her treatment. She seems to enjoy her food very much, and I believe it is doing her good. We get her out to ride twice nearly every day." Sarah McKenterfer to WCW, June 20, 1913. The dietary program. It was shortly after this that Ellen White wrote to Edson, "My appetite is good, and I eat the most simple food. Lately I have been enjoying the sweet corn, it is delicious."
Letter 11, 1913.
As to the dietary program in the home, Sarah McKenterfer and the cook usually consulted together in deciding on the menus, Sarah knowing well what Ellen White would prefer and what she could and could not eat. At the time Ellen White wrote the above, Evelyn Grace White, 13, was a part-time helper to the cook, and she has provided quite detailed information on the meals served. According to Grace, the large dining table was always nicely set for the meals, breakfast and dinner. There was no formal evening meal. At the center of the long table, which was covered with a white linen cloth, there was either a bouquet of flowers or a bowl of fruit. In addition to the regular setting of silverware, there were silver napkin rings at each place setting, holding the rolled-up linen serviettes. Each regular diner had his individual ring, which marked his place. Visitors, who at the first meal were assigned a ring, would find their places without oral directions. Ellen White sat at the head of the table, with Sarah McKenterfer at her right around the corner. Breakfast would consist of some hot cereal, usually a whole grain cereal, cracked wheat, millet, cornmeal, oatmeal, and sometimes homemade hominy, or boiled wheat that had been cooked overnight in the fireless cooker. Breakfast was one of the fruit meals, Grace reports. "We had sometimes four kinds of fruit. We just used lots of fruit. Fresh, canned, dried. We never put sugar on our cereal." DF 129E, Dinner at Elmshaven, an interview with Grace Jacques, June 8, 1978. "The cereal would be eaten with cream, and at times with dates, raisins, or banana added. Jersey and Guernsey cows on the farm furnished milk for the household and sometimes for the households of the working staff. At the White home the milk would be placed in rather shallow enameled pans, brought to a boil, and then put in a screen cooler in the cellar. By morning it was covered with a soft layer of rich cream, which was used on the table in the place of butter, and of course, for such dishes as cereals. Toast at the breakfast table would be eaten with cream. There might be a warm drink such as malted milk or caramel cereal, a cereal coffee, a forerunner of such products as postum and other coffee substitutes. Casserole dishes were not seen on the breakfast table. Breakfast was usually served at 7:30, right after the family had had morning worship." Grace reports that for the dinner, served at 1 o'clock, there would usually be three hot dishes, including a protein dish. There was a large garden at Elmshaven, so usually there were some fresh vegetables, and in winter there was an abundance of dried corn and canned tomatoes. A baked dish of macaroni, with beaten corn and eggs, frequently appeared on the table. Cottage cheese was served, but not cured cheeses. Ellen White liked cooked greens every day, and these would vary according to season.
From the fields came dandelion and mustard greens, and, of course, there were other more conventional leafy dishes.
The dish of greens was usually especially for Ellen White. One day as Sarah McKenterfer passed the bowl of dandelion greens to Ellen White, she said, "Mother, here is your horse feed." The latter looked over the table at the other dishes and quietly replied, "Well, I don't know as my horse feed is any worse than your cow's peas."
As Grace described meals at Ellen White's table, she declared, "The meals were delicious.
Mealtime was a happy time and a big occasion of the day, Ibid." Grace reported that good bread was made in the home, and perhaps two or three times a week whole wheat gems would be served, a muffin-like product made without leaven, raised by the air beaten into the batter and baked in a very hot oven in cast iron gem irons. Gems in the White household went back to the decade of the health reform vision. Questioned about preserves or fruit butters in the White home, Grace replied, "We put up strawberry jam and blackberry jam and loganberry jam, but we ate it sparingly, I would say. Grandmother was not one to say, 'No, you can't have any of this.' But, eat it moderately. Don't eat too much, but enjoy a nice slice of bread and cream and strawberry jam. It's delicious." Ibid. Beverages were often on the table, but used in modest amounts: tomato juice, grape and other fruit juices, carrot juice, milk, and buttermilk. Besides the cows on the farm, there were chickens fenced in under the apple trees. These supplied the family with eggs that were used in cooking and occasionally served soft-boiled on the table. For desserts, fruit was often used, and occasionally a little pumpkin or lemon pie, tapioca pudding, or bread pudding. The Sanitarium Food Company was in the valley close by, and such foods as nut loaf, protose, peanut butter, crackers both plain and with fruit bread, and Granos biscuits, a wheat flake product, all found their way into the White home. It can be said that the table represented no extremes, only the consistent counsels given down through the years, and everyone enjoyed eating at Sister White's table. It has been rumored that Ellen White, during the last few years of her life, reverted to the use of some meat. This is wholly untrue. Mention has been made that only two meals were served in the White home. Those who ate at the table were engaged in literary work, and the program worked well. If a member of the household or a visitor desired a light evening meal, he was at liberty to go to the large, well-stocked pantry and fix whatever appealed to him. Such was not frowned upon by Ellen White or other members of the family. In the summer that Grace assisted in the kitchen and dining room of Ellen White's home, her twin grandsons Henry and Herbert White, with the earnings of their little printing office, purchased a Model T Ford. It was a touring car, 1 year old. They were delighted with its performance and boasted that they could run 100 miles on a dollar's worth of gasoline. May White to WCW, July 6 and 8, 1913. The twins took their grandmother for a ride in their car in August.
She wrote to Edson, "Willie and his family are well. His twin boys are busy workers. They have recently purchased an automobile, and yesterday I took my first ride in it. It is the easiest machine I have ever ridden in." Letter 11, 1913.
While earlier in the year she spoke several times in nearby churches, a service in the St. Helena Church on Sabbath, September 27, marked the close of her ministry in the pulpit. 2 days later, her fourth grandson, Francis Edward, was born to William and May White.
She was pleased at the Elmshaven office. As to book work in the office, the staff was concentrating on gospel workers. In addition, a new line of work with the E.G. White books was getting underway.
As the church was stretching forth to new lands, the people working at Elmshaven and the General Conference Committee were giving study as to how to make such books as The Desire of Ages, Patriarchs and Prophets, and The Great Controversy available in a size that could be produced within the financial reach of peoples of different countries, especially the Orient. After the 1913 session, three men of mission experience were asked by the General Conference to go to Elmshaven for a few months to make selections from Ellen White's writings that might be translated later into many languages. WCW to S.E.N. Haskell, October 7, 1913. In early October, R.W. Munson, who had been in mission service in Indonesia, and J.S. James and L.E.J. Burgess, both missionaries to India, were at Elmshaven undertaking this new task. Burgess was soon looking through Patriarchs and Prophets, selecting materials that would make several pamphlets of 40 to 60 pages each. As Ellen White considered the matter, she declared that it was much better for 10,000 people to have half a loaf than it was for only 1,000 to have a whole loaf, WCW, as told to L. White.
Thus began the work of making abridgments of the E.E.G. White books for publications in lands where the work of the church was just beginning.
Writing to A.G. Daniels on December 31st, W.C. White reported the work well underway.
An important vision on December 3rd.
Before the year ended, Ellen White received an important vision relating to the work of St. Helena's Sanitarium and its physician-in-chief. The institution was enjoying a good patronage. The head physician was a skillful surgeon with a reputation that enhanced the standing of the sanitarium. This was much needed after some unfortunate circumstances that surrounded the work of his predecessor. But the sanitarium board was faced with a very real problem when the physician expressed his need for more money than he was receiving. At the time, all members of the medical staff were salaried employees of the institution. The physician-in-chief talked of an increase in salary and a percentage of the fees charged for his surgical operations. He wanted to remain in his position, but he was prepared to resign if the board could not make an adjustment in his favor. He was willing to give the sanitarium time to consider the matter carefully. On Wednesday night, December 3rd, the board canvassed it thoroughly, but could reach no decision. The physician agreed to hold on for another month, giving the board ample time to find its way. The meeting closed a little after midnight. Earlier in the day, as the Union Conference Committee was meeting at the sanitarium, W.C. White had invited committee board members to visit Elmshaven, just below the sanitarium, to see what was going on in the office. He suggested that it would cheer his mother if they were to pay her a little visit. He reminded the men that she was growing old and it was uncertain how long she would live. The visit would have to be made early, for the men would be in a meeting of the conference committee all day, to be followed by another meeting of the sanitarium board in the evening. W.C. White had intended to alert his mother in ample time in the morning, but the sanitarium board had not adjourned until very late the night before, and he overslept. He awoke at almost the time set for the visit of the men. In fact, they were most likely already on their way down the hill, about a 15-minute walk. He dressed hastily and hurried over to Elmshaven, found his mother upstairs in her writing room, and told her of the impending visit. "I don't want to see them," was her response. She told him that she had had a strange experience in the night and that she was not feeling well. "I can't see them," she repeated. WCW to AGD, December 19, 1913, WCW is told to A.L. White. When she spoke of having a strange experience in the night, her son was more than ever eager that she should meet the men. He knew that at times when boards and committees were struggling with difficult problems, his mother was at the same time in vision going through the experience with them. Perhaps, he thought, she would have some light for them. So he said to her, "Mother, there are several of our conference presidents who wish to speak to you, and I intended to bring them up to your room, but as you are not feeling well, if you will come down to the sitting room, I will invite them to come in and meet you there." WCW to AGD, December 19, 1913. He assured her that they would not take much of her time or strength. She acceded and went down to the living room. It was quite a sizable group that came together, shook hands with Ellen White, and found seats in the room. W.C. White thought they would engage in conversation, telling her a little about their work, but silence prevailed. To break the ice, W.C. White began to tell his mother about the board meetings. "Today we must enter into consideration of sanitarium problems, particularly the question of the wages we should pay to physicians and surgeons. We have in our St. Helena's Sanitarium a God-fearing physician who has won the confidence of all his associates, a man whom God has blessed greatly in his ministry to the sick. He wants to remain, and everybody wants him to remain, and he feels that it would be right for him to remain if his brethren could grant him a wage about twice as large as that paid to our average workers. He loves to give freely, and he wishes to have funds with which to live and to use for this purpose. We are much perplexed, and we would be glad to know if you have any light on this matter in Manuscript 12, 1913, Selected Messages 2:202-203. With this introduction, Ellen White began to talk freely, and it was easily seen she had a definite message for the board members. Clarence Chrysler took notes. Her response was so clear and provided such a decisive answer to the questions the sanitarium had been wrestling with and the course they should follow that they were deeply impressed. There was clearness and power with which she presented the matter. WCW to AGD, December 19, 1913. "Speaking to the point," she said, "if he is granted considerably more than other physicians, they will come to believe they are not treated right unless they have more also. We must move cautiously and understandingly, and not allow wages to creep up so high that many will be tempted. Unless you have some clear light from the Lord, it is not advisable to pay one man considerably more than another doing a similar work. For, if you do, the others will think it perfectly proper to expect similar high wages. We must look at all things on all sides, and it is so of no use for us to think that we can offer a successful worker a high wage simply because he may demand it. We must, rather, consider what we can afford to do at the present time, when the fields are opening upon which we shall henceforth have to expend much more means than we have spent hitherto. These are matters that will test the faith of our people. Manuscript 12, 1913, Ibid. 2:203.
With this as a beginning, the interview continued for an hour and more.
Arguments were presented as to the special value to the institution of the head physician, and also the problems other institutions would face if a precedent were set along the lines proposed. In response, Ellen White made it clear that we must work harmoniously. One brother says, such and such a brother has a certain wage, and I must have a wage to correspond. And so the wages will climb, and keep climbing, higher and still higher. The fact is that the wages of some may have to be lower and still lower in order that we may meet the extensive requirements of the work that is before us in warning the world. The Lord desires us to be consistent in everything. He desires us to follow the self-sacrificing example of Christ, and when we do that, His blessing rests upon us. Those who have the cause of God at heart must realize that they are not working for themselves or for the small wage they may be receiving, and that God can make the little they do receive go farther than they may think it can. He will give them satisfaction and blessing as they go forward in self-sacrificing labor. And He will bless every one of us as we labor in the meekness of Christ. Ibid. Portions of the interview in Ibid. 2:179, 180, 202-206. Elder G. W. Reeser offered a short prayer to close the interview. As the men left, several spoke words of appreciation to Ellen White. Reeser's were typical: "We are very thankful to have met you, Sister White, and to find you in good health.
And personally, I am thankful for the good counsel you have given us this morning. You have surely spoken a word in season to us all." Ibid. Clarence Chrysler went immediately to his typewriter and by early afternoon had the 18-page report of the interview ready for use.
A copy was taken to the manager of the sanitarium, and he in turn promptly passed it on to the physician concerned, reporting to A.G. Daniels on December 19. W.C. White wrote,
"When we met Thursday evening, it was soon settled that we need not longer discuss the question of percentage."
Then the matter of wages was faithfully considered, and a little after midnight the board, by unanimous vote, requested Doctor to withdraw his resignation without expecting an increase of wages. The doctor discussed the situation lengthily and feelingly, and finally consented to withdraw his resignation. The much-loved and well-respected physician stayed on, but because of the complexities of the overall problem, Elder E. E. Andros, president of the Pacific Union Conference, returned to Elmshaven a week later to review the matter with Sister White, especially in the light of the wages of institutional workers generally. To him the counsel given earlier was reinforced, that is, a worker in the cause is not in a position to set his own wage. Manuscript 14, 1913.
The experience seemed to give Ellen White a lift. She wrote a letter to her son Edson after the interview on Thursday morning, December 4th. "My work is not yet done, no, no. This morning I had an interview with several ministers who have been long in the work. The Lord gave me important instruction for them, and a message of encouragement. I thank Him that they appreciated the words spoken." Letter 13, 1913.